Welcome to the Inner Man Show, a podcast by men for men. If you're a new listener, welcome. If not, thank you for coming back and joining in our conversation. You moving your keys?
I am.
The Inner Man Show is dedicated to helping men solve their problems, starting with their mental health and expanding outwards. Accountability, ownership, and self-sufficiency are just some of the things we promote at the IMP. So if you're ready to take your personal development to new levels and become the best father, husband, son, friend, and community leader you can be, this is the show for you. As always, this episode of the podcast is brought to you by The Beard Circle. The Beard Circle is a beard grooming essentials online store based out of Vancouver, BC. Head over to The Beard Circle today and use their entire list of products. They have shampoos, conditioners, oils, balms, combs, and bags. The website is www.thebeardstruggle.com and use discount code INNERMAN, INNERMAN, for 15% off your next purchase.
You can find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/INNERMANproject. Also on Instagram, INNERMANYXH, as well as Twitter at INNERMANYXH. INNERMAN Project Foundation is proud to announce Unmasked Masculinity peer-led group sessions are now being held in Calgary, Alberta. Every Tuesday at 7 p.m., you can join Anthony Hart and Shane Smith at the Scarborough United Church. This is a great opportunity to discuss any mental health concerns you may have, connect with community resources, or simply connect with other men. If you're looking for more information, you can send us an email at innermanyxh@gmail.com.
CBD North only uses the best all-natural ingredients and uses third-party lab tests to ensure their products meet the standards that all Canadians deserve. Based in Vancouver, BC, their expert team is ready to ship to any city, town, village, hockey rink, or summer cottage in Canada within 2 to 5 business days. To show their commitment to fellow Canadians, they created the very first ever CBD assistance program in Canada. For those in need, they are providing a 45% discount on all full-price orders. Post-secondary students, persons on long-term disability, persons of low-income households, active military personnel, military veterans, first responders, including firemen, police officers, and EMTs, and if you're a senior over 65, they have oils, creams, gummies, and even products for your dog. This isn't a paid advertisement. This is us supporting an amazing cause, which will be coming to an end actually pretty soon here. Skylar Roth is running across Canada, and he's raising awareness for mental health. And for the next 6 months, CBD North is donating and fundraising each week and donating $5 per sale to Miles for Smiles. Yeah, they're also matching $1,000 in total donations. Check out CBD North on Instagram, at North Wellness CBD, and check out Skylar's Instagram, Miles for Smiles Canada. Again, this is an amazing cause, and we at the Internet Project cannot be more pumped for this amazing and inspirational event.
Also, a huge shout out to the amazing individuals over at Myrtle and May, and a huge shout out to Tasha Chenard for designing these mental health ribbons. We appreciate the love and donations. Make sure to follow Myrtle and May on Instagram at Myrtle and May. We also have our very own Brandon Hodel, board member of the IMP, wrote his second book, Talking to Myself. He is on Amazon, Kindle. I'm not exactly sure still what his new Amazon.
Yeah, I'm not too sure what his new he has like an author's page or something.
He has an author's page,
but all like I checked it again 2 or 3 days ago, and if you just punch in Brandon Hodel into the search bar, it'll actually take you to Talking to Myself and Jason Long.
Yeah, you can just search him on Facebook, and all of his stuff is plugged right onto his page, so it'll be easy to find.
Yeah, and we actually have a website.
We actually have a website.
And it's legit. It's nice. It's really nice.
It is, and we're actually going to have information on it for everyone to see.
What?
Surprising, what? Right? Yeah, we've only talked about it for a year.
I stopped announcing it. I was like...
We're like, I don't know.
I'm like, when it gets here, I guess. Yeah. So it's like... Yeah, but it's really nice to have one hub now. And as soon as you go to the website, it actually shows you... It'll ask you for your email, so you can go onto our email list. Anything IMP related, it's going to be sent out to you via email. Today we have a topic because we have an announcement. Mm-hmm. And we've made an announcement. Mm-hmm. Now, when this episode will come out, we have already made the announcement, and it is the intergenerational trauma treatment model.
That's right.
ITTM program.
ITTM program. Yeah, it's easier to say that.
Yeah.
It's like a tongue twister.
So Shane, walk us through a little bit of a background of what the ITTM program is.
So currently, right now, I'm halfway through training to complete this, to co-facilitate this with our social worker Renee Kemp. She will be leading it for us as she has her master's and it is eligible to do so. It is going to be in three different phases, phase A, B, and C. Phase A will be as a group of adults for parents. We will be teaching individuals about their traumas, what they went through, helping recognize what they went through and how to heal them and what they can do on their own to recognize these traumas to make those changes. So basically what that's going to look like. And then when we hit phase B and C, that's the individual counseling that we'll do with Renee. And that's another 16 sessions if need be. It isn't mandatory, it doesn't need to happen. It is just an option available to the citizens that need it.
So when you spoke to Renee, and what was the emphasis that you guys wanted to, you know, kind of bring to light in terms of what this program means to Medicine Hat? What is this going to look like in terms of, you know, vulnerable sectors, youth, people struggling with addictions, people struggling with PTSD, and why now?
So Renee brought this to my attention, actually. You know, she's a big fan of Innerman, which is great, obviously. She brought this to my attention and asked if we could maybe collab on this project. And I said, as soon as she explained what it was, I was fully on board. I brought it to the attention of Dylan and our group, and everyone was like, yeah, we need to do this. So it is actually based off the author and the program creator, Valerie Copping. She is currently doing the facilitating for my training right now. I've met her. She's great. She is going to be training us to be the Western Canada portion of her process, because she's covered in Ontario, Manitoba, some parts of the States, but we are totally uncharted territory here in Alberta, Saskatchewan, and BC. So that is going to be what we're tasked to do, is travel around and get the word out. And Medicine Hat is going to be our hub city through the Internet project.
So basically what we're doing is we're starting the pilot project with the ITTM program in hopes that we take this program throughout Western Canada, take it to vulnerable populations. And this is evidence-based, correct?
This is 25 years evidence-based practice. Mm-hmm. Yes. So it is very well known. It is, if anyone wants to check it out, www.ittm.ca, that will bring you right to her page, and it has all the information there. Obviously I'm fairly new with it, so I'm not.
Yeah. Really, I'm going to be posting in the show notes.
Yeah. I'm not totally well versed, and I'm not claiming to be an expert, but I've drowned myself in this material for the last little bit, and what I've learned has just been impactful in my own life. Honestly, it's made me realize a lot of stuff, and we went through a lot of diagramming, we went through a lot of therapy work, just kind of working with the group. And you know, it leaves a bad taste in your mouth, because you're like, I didn't have that problem, but now you do, and you're like, oh, okay, there it is.
Yeah.
So basically the whole basis of it is not dealing with the traumas that are happening right now. It's what happened in the past, healing those traumas before moving on. And that essentially is going to in turn not have those traumas in the future, and it's not going to have that cycle. It's not going to cycle through generations and generations. That's why intergenerational trauma, right? That's why we're supposed to be the stopping point of that.
So yeah, the buck stops with the people involved, right? And so I'm assuming, because we're focusing on the prior past traumas, that it's basically we want to mitigate anything happening in the future regarding past traumas, and help create better habits around those past traumas, correct?
That's right, yeah. So what we've learned is it's the individuals that went through these major traumas in their past, they didn't even realize that that was so impactful in their life.
Right.
Right? And they're not realizing why they're acting a certain way, and they're like, well, I don't know why I'm doing this. Mm-hmm. I have no idea. I have no control of this. Mm-hmm. Well, it's because you haven't, you know, healed yourself from that certain situation. And yeah. And that's where we come in and we teach you. Mm-hmm. Like we do a lot of diagramming and stuff like that. So basically it's a lot of hands-on work. It's a lot of writing stuff down. It's like, and this, it's rung true for me several times already. It's like, write down when you were 6 years old, an impactful moment for you, and rate from 1 to 10, how bad that impact is. Remember, you're 6 years old. You're not thinking about who you were now. It's how you were impacted when you were six. Mm-hmm. So when you actually put yourself in 6 year old shoes, you're like, oh damn, the most minuscule thing, like, you know, a broken promise, was a 10 out of 10.
Right.
This isn't how the world works. Mm-hmm. This isn't how I've seen things going, how I got wronged.
Right. And now that broken promise that was a 10 out of 10 has created trust problems throughout your whole life,
that's whether it
was with friends or with family or whoever it was with.
Yeah. So we worked on a thing called a behavior loop. I don't know if you're familiar with that at all.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. So basically it's, we did a recent one. I'll share it because I'm pretty open about myself. But I did a behavioral loop on my work and basically how I'm working through some situations where I'm struggling.
Mm-hmm.
And once I did that and I, you know, had 36 of the same thing happening, no changes in me, just having the same thought, feeling, action.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, okay, now that that's on paper, I see that. Why am I spending so much time on this?
Right.
Why is there no changes? Why can't I move past it? Why am I stuck in this loop?
Yeah.
Essentially.
Yeah.
So, and then that's the learning process. That's learning about yourself. And then, you know, that's when the therapists come in and
that's the power of writing it down, right?
That's right. Yeah. Having, and I said this several times because I'm the only non-clinician in the entire group.
Oh, really?
And the only male.
Yeah.
So like I stick out like a sore thumb. So I'm called on a lot and I appreciate it. It's not a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because I want to learn the best of my ability, especially not being a clinician. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of those things where they're like, okay, Shane, what do you think? And I'm like, well, this is how I see it. And they're like, that's exactly how it is. And I'm like, that's a relief because like how I'm seeing it and doing it on my own. I'm like, this is how I feel about it. And this is what it is.
Right.
So they're like, what you're feeling right now is exactly what we're trying to accomplish. I'm like, oh, so this really does work.
Right.
Because I've went through it now.
Well, Rod, have you touched on any of this with your schooling?
A little bit. I think we touched on it a little bit in theories class last year.
Mm-hmm.
But ITTM theory also goes hand in hand with your attachment theory.
Right.
Which, I mean, like you said, at 6 years old, someone makes a promise.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, my whole world's over. I don't trust anybody.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, attachment theory also says that. You break promise or you get neglected as a kid, you're going to have a disenchantment or not disenchantment, but I can't remember the word of it right now, but yeah, you don't care.
Right.
Yeah. And weird to see because like, there was examples provided of, you know, past groups, no names provided or anything, obviously for reasons. But there was an individual who was sexually abused as a young girl, eight years old. And she immediately put 10 out of 10. Right. That's what you would think. Right.
Yeah.
But when they actually did the digging and stuff, there was like three or four things that she put in front of her traumas that in essence in her now would have been like, that's nothing compared to this.
Yeah.
But this is what impacts me now. This does not.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I'm pulling all of my impactful traumas that I'm dealing through. This is not it. But in my mind, this is the trauma I need to focus on because it's a big deal.
Right. So like you hear that a lot with sexual assault or abuse among kids. It's not necessarily the abuse, the assault. It's went to mom and dad and mom and dad said it never happened that way.
And that's the major problem.
Yeah.
That is what is a major problem for these kids and what is creating these traumas.
Or that
is not getting,
bad.
Not
yeah.
believing it, not, and exactly, and, or fluffing it off. Like, there's another example. I'm going to give a few examples too.
Sure.
When I said that, you know, I got beat up from my older siblings when I was a young kid, right? And my parents would be like, you're fine.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no, that didn't happen. Like,
right.
You have no marks on you. And you're just like, okay, so that's
just
another
got the shit kicked out of me. As
yeah.
Kid.
And like, I didn't, getting the shit kicked out of me wasn't the problem.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't, I don't even care about that.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't matter. It was the aftermath. It was like, I wasn't believed. I wasn't, you know, it wasn't treated properly. I felt like I was, you know, like I was alone. I was.
Right.
And at 6, 7,
no one's believing you.
6, 7, 8 years old, that's very impactful.
Well, and my thing was with my trauma growing up was like, well, am I even believing my own story now?
Right.
That's, yeah. As an adult, when I started talking about my past and my abuse, it was like, hey, Dylan, are you even telling yourself the truth? Like, did this really happen the way you were thinking and it actually happened? And what that was for me is basically it was very similar. It wasn't my parents that I went to. It was the babysitter I was going to at the time. And I said, this, you know, X, Y, and Z happened.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing was done. Not a conversation with my parents, not a conversation with the school. I continued to go to this babysitter for another 2-3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just like, this just kept happening and happening and happening. And the same thing was done over and over again.
Yeah.
And now looking back at it, it's just like, oh yeah, like I need to decompartmentalize that, that the abuse was one thing, but the way and the reaction of everybody else in the world was another.
Yeah.
And that is where I'm having problems believing my own self.
Yeah,
right?
And that's where the true traumas are built.
Yeah. Yeah, and what I noticed, and this is great, a topic that we're on, is other things that happened in my life, I doubted my own story.
Yep.
Like, you know, that didn't happen that way. Like, and it's almost like you bury it over and over and over again,
mm-hmm.
to the point where you're a 26, 27 year old guy, and now you got to unpack all of it. You're like, this is so much.
Yeah.
This
yeah.
is too much.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And it's really, like, in terms of, I guess, major traumas and stuff like that, like, it was a lot of these things were really easy for me. And I'm like, it was really clear that I never had any, like, if I'm going to compare myself, which I don't like to do,
mm-hmm.
but just for an example,
mm-hmm.
if I were to compare to someone who's had a very, very poor childhood,
mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say that I did.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe that I did.
Mm-hmm.
Did I have things go on? Yeah, of course.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's part of growing up for a lot of people.
Yeah.
But like some people really have a poor life.
Yeah, but I'm going to play devil's advocate and say like your traumas are your traumas.
And that's
right?
what I'm.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
what I'm going to get is the impacts are the same.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
It just depends on the person.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter because this child that's used to being, so to speak, shit on their entire life.
Mm-hmm.
They're used to it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they know.
Yeah.
So they're not impacted.
Their baseline's here.
Yeah.
Where yours is up here.
So like when things are going great for Shainer over here,
mm-hmm.
And then something kind of smaller happens,
mm-hmm.
that's like a boom.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So like I've really understood that it doesn't matter who you are, where you come from,
mm-hmm.
every single person in this entire world can use this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so and like we have conversations in PR all the time, and one of the gentlemen on Sunday, he was talking about, you know, he brought something up to his family that they had not known. And she got really emotional, the mom. She felt guilty about it. And he said, well, it's not your fault. And I said, I think you need to take a step back. Our parents did the best they could with the information that they had.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them made mistakes. We're all human. We all make mistakes. And the situation you're telling me, that was her mistake. It's okay to say, I was a 7, 6, 8 year old kid. This happened to me. You let it happen to me. It's okay to say that about your mom.
Totally.
Because you have to call the kettle black.
Yeah.
You have to be truthful with yourself in the situation, right?
Yeah. I don't buy, well, she did the best that she could.
Mm-hmm.
Because did she? Do you really know that?
Yeah.
Do you really understand that? Did they?
What does that really mean?
What does that mean?
Right. And what my best could be different from your best.
Very much so.
Right?
Very much so.
Well, and that goes back to your traumas.
Yeah.
You know, Rod could have X, Y, and Z trauma that prevents him from doing things with his kids a certain way that you have no problem doing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's just the way that life is. And you're absolutely right, Shane. I think a program like this not only takes off a medicine hat, but if it can get out to, you know, vulnerable sectors of our populations. You know, we were having this discussion.
Small, secluded towns.
Yeah. So we were having this discussion last night. Rural areas are number one, you know, reservations, small towns, that sort of thing. And then hub cities for addiction. You think of Kelowna, you think of Siri, you think
mm-hmm.
of, you know, downtown Calgary. You put something like this right in the hub of there. Now we can start having this conversation.
You do it for free.
And that is the biggest part of what we're doing here
mm-hmm.
is we're taking this model of that has evidence-based practice with a social worker, with clinicians, putting it into practice, and we're providing a free resource for the community.
Well, we're trying to. We're not there yet.
Yeah.
We're trying to. So
pilot project.
Yes, pilot project. So we're not going to say this one.
Yeah.
This one might not be that,
mm-hmm.
but we promise we are doing our best to get there.
Mm-hmm.
We really believe that any mental health
mm-hmm.
that we can provide should not cost a dime.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and we've always said that, right?
100%. So that is our promise to you is we are going to get there eventually.
Mm-hmm.
We're not quite there yet, but we will get there.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that I really wanted to throw out there that I forgot to mention, the whole base idea of ITTM is for the parents to be the child's first line of defense
mm-hmm.
when it comes to emotional stability. That's massive.
Mm-hmm.
That's massive. So like you guys said, you know, I don't believe that's what happened when your child comes to you and coughs, tells
mm-hmm.
you something traumatic that happens. Well, that didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then, yeah, right? So that's where the trauma starts.
Mm-hmm.
But if, you know, if we can teach the parents how to react to these traumas and, you know, appropriately, and give them the sound advice and go through the right channels and do what they need to do to protect themselves and their child. Right. That is the best case scenario. Mm-hmm.
What's the situation like with social work and the parenting aspect? Is there a lot of talk around, you know, raising children or the way it should be done, or children and trauma?
Yes and no. I'm going to say the yes part of it because they still want the parents to raise a kid. They want the children to, they don't want to take kids out of the home because, like, back in the early 90s, 80s, it was.
That's just what they did.
Yeah. Oh, you're
one foster.
Yeah. Rip them away and call it.
Yeah. Your one parent smokes weed. Well, no. And they call it now the tiki box social worker, right? Oh, your parent smokes weed. Well, that's wrong because it's illegal. We got to pull your kid.
Yeah.
But the family down the street could be drinking every single night, not alcoholics, just having drinks every night and beat the shit out of the kids.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's not a big deal because, well, it's legal.
It's legal. It doesn't hit the tiki box.
Yeah. Right. So,
and at that time, to physically harm the kid wasn't an issue.
Yeah. As it is now.
As it is now.
Right. So, yeah, we do let them, the parents, raise the kid as much as possible.
Mm-hmm. There's a line.
Yeah. The no side of it is, I know my cousin told me, he's like, we went from one wing of the bird of we're tiki boxing, we're pulling everyone out, to this mom's a meth addict, but whenever she goes on a 2-week bender, she's got her parents to watch the kids, so it's perfectly fine. Don't worry about it.
It's wild.
And it's one side to the other. And you're like, we need the common ground. Mm-hmm. If you can find that common ground, people won't be scared to come talk to social workers. Mm-hmm. Because before, like, I know indigenous people growing up on the reserve, they could get the shit kicked out of them by their parents every single night and wouldn't say anything to a social worker because they knew exactly that as soon as they got told, they got thrown into the system.
That's right.
And I mean, for an Aboriginal kid, when you got thrown into the system, you're forgotten about more or less. And then now on this side of the wing, well, the kids could be sitting at home crying, and there's actually a book we're reading, The Glass Castle, where the daughter, like, it's free reign parenting, and the daughter's 3 years old, and she lit her dress on fire cooking hot dogs at 3 years old. So, I mean, that's, mom was doing something in the bedroom, dad wasn't there.
Yeah.
It's perfectly fine. They have supports.
Mm-hmm.
So we got to get away from one tip of the wing bird to, and find that middle ground where, you know, beating a kid is kind of still bad, like, it's bad, not kind of bad, but it is bad. Yeah. But at the same time, mom or dad going on a 3-4 day bender, 5-6 day bender, and not having any contact with the kids is just as bad as beating your kid, because you're still neglecting your children.
It's emotional.
Yeah. Harry Harlow, I do believe, was the social worker, the psychologist that did the baby monkey test. And he had two monkeys that were born. They were pulled from their parents. One, and then they put imitation monkeys. And they were, one was just a wire thing that looked like a monkey that had a bottle. The other one was still a wire thing, but wrapped in soft blankets and stuff like that. So the kid, or the monkey that had the wired monkey, just knew that monkey is the food. And he had no comfort, so that, which goes back to attachment issues, right? And then as it got older, that monkey kind of was separate and away from everybody else. And then the other monkey that had that big other monkey that was all wrapped up in all the plush clothing was better because that was a safety thing. So the trauma that, I mean, kids go through nowadays, I mean, and then you added COVID with it. So,
new variable.
Right. So, I mean, as social workers, we got to look at it as a totally different side. I mean, even like those 18 months when we were all locked up, I talked to cops and other social workers in the field, and they're like, we've got so many calls. Like, domestic abuse has went up so much. Like, I think it was like 25% or something like that.
There's no running or hiding.
Yeah. And, you know, and the, like, teachers were screaming at the government for a while, and for a while, like, these kids need to be in school because that could be their only 8 hours.
They're only safe.
Of being away from all this.
Yeah.
Right. And when you add in toxic stress into a child's life, they're figuring it out now that the chemical reaction from neurogenesis in your environment, I do believe is what it was called, is messing kids up left, right, and center, because their reactions and how they react to stress and everything is they're just like a, like you said, that bar.
Yeah.
Right. So now you can have like upper class families that are raising a whole bunch of kids because of the abuse that they've seen at home with their bar, just with like the same as the ghetto kid.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And people are doing this now. Like, what's going on?
Right.
Why is my kid acting like this? So
yeah, we see it all like between my kid's school, and I know you're coming up on kindergarten soon, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Next year.
With the boy, right? Yeah. So you're gonna start seeing this too. And the one thing that we see is like, that's just it, Rod. Like my wife works in the high school, mm-hmm. my kids in the elementary, low income, high income, it don't matter.
Yeah.
These kids got the same type of stresses.
Yeah.
And it is wild to me hearing some of the stories that come out of these schools about, you know, my 10 or 11 year old is smoking weed and having sex and doing this and doing that. And they come from a good home. But like the world we live in right now is so
over-sexualized.
It's over-sexualized. It's hyper-aggressive. It's instant gratification.
Yeah.
There's constant stimulation. I mean, how the kids have a regular sleeping pattern nowadays is beyond me, you know?
And everyone's a winner.
Yeah. And
really, my house.
Definitely. We're having this conversation with our oldest right now because he wants to stay up past 9. And I'm mm-hmm. like, dude, you need sleep.
Yeah,
like I don't think you're getting up at 6:30 in the morning. You need sleep.
Regardless of what time you go to bed, you're still going to wake up.
Yeah. You know, Johnny's sleeping. I don't care what Johnny's doing.
Yeah.
I want you to be healthy. I want you to be happy. I want you to enjoy life. Right.
My boy right now is not really relative because he's only 4, but he is like, why do you get to stay up?
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, because I'm the dad. And he's just like, all right, you win this one.
I got her bust out in the summertime. Well, the sun's not sleeping yet, so why do I have to?
Yeah.
Every dad, as soon as they said that, you know, my face perks up. I'm like, we can play that.
Yeah.
You can stay up as long as the sun is up in the summer, but when it goes down in the winter,
oh yeah,
you go to bed with the wind. Every parent does, I'm pretty sure.
So you actually brought up reservations and mm-hmm. Did you grow up on the res, or what was that like in terms of intergenerational trauma? Like what was that experience like for you?
I enjoyed it. I was a country kid, right? Reservation kid, whatever, but we grew up in the country. So I learned to trap, I learned to hunt, I learned to fish. But like I only lived a football and halfway from my cook and my mushroom, and they're residential school survivors. So, and I mean, finding out like when I later grew up,
mm-hmm.
finding out that the last residential school closed down in like 95 or something.
99.
Yeah. So the last one closed in 99. I was born in 82. So at any given moment, I would have been, I could have been at any of these schools when like the government could have just came and been like, yeah, see ya,
mm-hmm.
we're taking them. And still at that point, my parents' hands would have been tied.
Yeah.
Right. But seeing how like my Muslim and Kukum acted, my Kukum was really nurturing.
Mm-hmm.
So was my Muslim too, but my Muslim was more of the, this is how things are done.
The old school.
Yeah. Right. And you got in trouble, you got in trouble.
Right.
Right. With my Muslim after like, before I was born, my dad used to would tell me that he was a heavy alcoholic, which was almost a given for most Aboriginal kids who came out of the residential school system.
Grandfather's the same way.
Yeah.
Died of alcoholism.
Yeah. The effects of like your intergenerational trauma coming out of the residential school came with like their loss of their language,
mm-hmm.
their loss of their culture, which brings you like you don't know who you are. Yeah, your spirituality. You have no clue who you are.
Mm-hmm.
Your native tongue
mm-hmm.
that you're allowed to speak for, let's say you learned to speak at 18 months, 2 years old. So for 4 years, your native tongue that you're not, was told that was like devil tongue.
Right.
You'd get slapped, you would get whipped.
Mm-hmm.
There's abuse anyways.
Yeah.
Then A lot of people that are starting to come talk out about it said, yeah, the physical abuse was fine, like was bad. The sexual abuse was worse than the physical abuse, but the worst abuse that most of the survivors from residential schools endured was the mental abuse.
Yeah, emotional. You
know? Yeah, emotional and mental abuse, which was you're nothing, you're an idiot, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, pick your insult, right?
Yeah, I want to say, was it John A. McDonald or is it Jean Chrétien? I think it was Jean Chrétien, actually, with the 60s paper with Pierre Trudeau when they tried to do that. I think it was called the White Paper to assimilate all natives into the white world, as he so kindly said.
Yeah.
But they said, let's take the native out of the Indian, I want to say. I want to say that's the quote, but I'm not 100% sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, and we still see it today.
Honestly, I'd probably go as far as the savage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Take the savage out of the Indian or something.
Kill the
Indian, not the native or something.
Wild like that. Yeah. It's like, wow.
Yeah.
Like,
and I mean, this was our government officials.
Yeah.
I mean, and then you had the 60 scoop, which was,
it was drastic.
Yeah. They're still finding kids now that are finding out from that were shipped overseas, finding out that they're actually Canadian.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. And that was 50 years ago?
That happened. Not long ago.
Yeah, 60 years ago.
I listened to a podcast on that, and that was all over North America.
Yeah.
From Texas all the way to Nunavut. They were just clean sweeping Aboriginal people.
So, and because they couldn't, I mean, this is what I'm going with. Mm-hmm. They couldn't kill them with war. Mm-hmm. They couldn't kill them with smallpox. They couldn't kill them with the residential schools. So what was the next best way? Take the children out of there so they couldn't have any more children.
Mm-hmm.
Assimilate them or...
Yeah, what we now know is assimilation, which is supposed to be a nice
they
term.
Taught us those terms, like in social class. Mm-hmm. Did you go to school on the reservation?
No, I went to school in town.
Okay, so you might have had the same education, but I remember hearing that word, assimilation. And I'm
that doesn't sound so bad, the way that it was delivered.
When you read a social textbook, you're like, oh, that's just Canadian history.
Yeah.
And then you go on with the rest of your day.
Mm-hmm. And then when you're an adult and you actually learn.
And what's
like, holy shit.
What's crazy about this is like, could you imagine if this was being taught to our whole generation? Mm-hmm. Like, listen, we knew about it. I knew people that would talk about it. My aunties would talk about it. Like, this is something that was not really a secret, but it was still a secret.
Hush, hush.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden in 2021, we're sitting here having this conversation. We're going, this was a way of life.
Yeah. Yeah. My grandfather never breathed a word of it.
And
he actually, to the point where I think the abuse was so bad that he didn't even identify as an Indigenous person.
Yeah.
Which
I can believe that.
Clear as day.
Mm-hmm. That's my family.
And I'm just like, okay, grandpa. But I'm sorry that happened to you. But yeah, and you know, he eventually died of alcoholism and all that stuff. So like, obviously there was so much trauma there that he just was unspeakable.
Yeah, that's my mom's side of the family. My mom has two half sisters, and this is the exact same thing. Like they don't even recognize it. They're just, and it's sad because like it's history. Like I'm learning about where my grandmother came from, and you know. And the Eastern Bloc and what her life was like, and literally coming to Canada as refuge.
How you affect
people. Yeah, and you're like, oh, this is a part of me. Like, I was a part of this history, and now I'm here today. Like, that was taken from these kids, right? So, okay, so the ICTM program is Medicine Hat. It's a pilot project. Our goal moving forward for the next 6 weeks to 6 months is what, Shane?
Well, we're going to be rolling this out. We've already picked a date. I think October 13th.
Yeah. So this
whatever that Tuesday
right
is.
Right before.
So we're firing this up. So I mean, by the time you hear this, I'd be well trained, and we're almost probably firing this thing up. But we're going to be advertising on our page, and we're going to really get this out there. We don't know what the response is going to be. We're going to do as much promoting as possible. You know, I'm doing this out of the kindness of my heart. No wages taken or anything like that. I'm going to volunteer my time. I'm going to do this for the citizens, and Renee's in the same boat.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
So we just truly care about this program, and we believe in it.
Well, you care about your city too.
Yeah, we believe in it. We believe in, and we also both believe in it as well. I believe that mental health should be free for all people. That shouldn't be something that someone has to pay for.
Mm-hmm.
So that is our goal, and that's what we want to do. So in the next 6 months, we want to be running this
probably twice by then. We'll be run through this twice. And hopefully we're moving on to other cities.
Yeah, I never understood. You can go break your arm and get medication. You pay a little bit of, if you have insurance, you maybe pay nothing for your prescription and painkillers. But God forbid that, you know, my wife has a basic little antidepressant that she's on. And if we didn't have insurance, it'd be like $120 a month.
I'd rather break my arm than have a series of anxiety fits.
Yeah, kidding. Yeah, absolutely.
Untreated, broken arm.
Exactly. With that being said, I think we need to get somebody in here to have this conversation in more depth, because this is a powerful conversation. And I think that when it comes to intergenerational trauma, if I think back to one of our first podcasts that we did with Carl Schallhorn, he was a counselor from New York State. He talked about the African American communities down there. And what they're seeing is just this intergenerational trauma. He brought that up to me. And when Shane brought up the treatment model, I was like, oh, this is what Carl was talking about, and what they started utilizing down in the States. And, you know, and being able to look back at, you know, mom and dad, grandma and grandpa, great grandma and grandpa, and just see that lineage of shit that went on year after year after year that was passed down to now our parents. And thank goodness that we have a podcast like this where we can hear about this information. We can go to the websites and the show notes. We can find this stuff out for ourselves. We can become aware of it and see what kind of change we can make in our own lives, because let's, quite frankly, our parents didn't have that opportunity, right? Yeah. So, but with that being said, Rod, what are your thoughts tonight, man?
I'm actually looking forward to this.
Yeah.
It'll be exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you're going to
expand my knowledge. Expand my knowledge a little bit more. Other than that, I can't really think of anything else about it. There's a quote by Stephanie Harp from Vancouver, I do believe she's from. She has a Stephanie Harp experience. She does TED Talks all over the country talking about the new, almost like an ITTM mod, but I do believe with the ITTM, you could bring it back to traditional ways.
For sure.
Right? I do believe there's...
It is CBT.
Yes.
Yes.
There is one where in this, I want to say it's Saskatchewan, that's a jail, but they use traditional native lessons, which they find out works with ITTM and CBT. Anyway, Stephanie Harp said, "We all have a raging fire within us. Just share your warmth and watch everything beautiful in the world thrive."
That's beautiful. What's her name? Stephanie Harp.
Stephanie Harp. And she was on the, she came into the Truth and Reconciliation Zoom podcast last year with the college, along with Murray Sinclair. And hearing them talk about issues that everyone kind of keeps it hush hush in Canada, because we're supposed to be this, well, we are still a great country, but they don't like their
ugly
past
to rear its ugly head.
Barely an ugly past. It is what it is.
Yeah.
I think that we got to start acknowledging it.
Yeah, that's how we grow. That's what we do.
Murray Sinclair said it the best. We have to not forgive the past, because if you can't forgive the past, you're going to keep that trauma with you, and you're just continuing the cycle. He's like, that's kind of what they wanted, that trauma to keep going. So you're always at the bottom of the barrel. Mm-hmm. He's like, we got to start being cream and start rising to the top more. And not so many words, right? I mean,
that's the truth though, right?
And my cookums told us, like, when I was growing up, she didn't want me to get into gangs. She didn't want me to do in hard drugs, become an alcoholic and all this other things. But what she did say, and I've kept it close to my heart for the longest time, is live your life. If you can, start learning your culture. Try to speak tongue, right? I tried to ask her to teach me. She said no, but that's still part of the trauma that she endured, right?
Sure.
So it's, you know, baby steps to learn any language, especially at 30 years old or whatever. But yeah, she's like, if you can love people that hate you, you're already winning the battle.
For sure.
And I mean, the way the world is so divided right now,
it's the only way you'll survive.
Yeah. Everyone hates everyone. I hate you because you're wearing a blue hat. Like,
people just find stuff to pick apart on everyone, and it's easier to bring someone down to your level instead of lifting someone up who's lower. And then, I mean, that goes into empathy and sympathy.
Absolutely.
But that could be a whole other... I could talk about that for another 20 minutes if I wanted to.
Well, that's why I want to do another podcast, because, you know, we're short on time tonight. But I think that this conversation in regards to ITTM, intergenerational trauma, addictions, vulnerable sectors, we need to start having these conversations mm-hmm. with people like yourself, with people who are lived professionals. It. People who have lived it, mm-hmm. absolutely. We need to start having these conversations, because let's face it, the world is quite chaotic right now. And, you know, I drive downtown Calgary every 2 weeks, and it sucks, man. Mm-hmm. It's gotten worse. And I sent you guys a video a couple weeks ago, and, you know, it's just, it is what it is. They've gotten to the point where they can't control it, right? Mm-hmm. With the homelessness and the addictions and yeah. everything else.
Going only going to get worse as this COVID
keeps going. Yeah. So. Shane, closing thoughts, man?
I just wanted to touch base, go back to what you said about the Saskatchewan jail that you were talking about. Was it the restorative justice model?
I think so.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's what it is, because that's more of the Indigenous based.
Yeah. But, yeah. Theories of practice.
Totally. 100%. So, okay, good. I just wanted to put that in my mind and confirm.
Don't forget Shane.
Yeah. Yeah. And just looking really forward to, you know, having you sit in on mm-hmm. us. And I'm looking forward to delivering this model. I believe in it. It's like more than ever mm-hmm. being a part of it. So, I think it's really going to help a lot of people. And I'm just grateful that I can have a hand in it.
Absolutely. Gentlemen, thanks for doing this tonight. As always, it's always a pleasure talking to you guys. Rod, welcome to the podcast for the foreseeable future. And, yeah. You know, it's nice to have the third wheel here and have a conversation, have a round table. So me and Shane just yelling at each other.
Yeah, annoying our voice.
Thanks for doing this, guys. And you have yourself a good night. Bye, everyone.